Thank you. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We'll go ahead with our next question. As a reminder, please state your name and company before posing your question. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, it's Sabahat Khan from RBC Capital Markets. Just, I guess, on the, I guess, the terminal opening up, I guess, for you to not have to go to two different places to load up the planes, is there a cost saving, I guess, you can give us or quantify what the savings there would be once you get that kind of a base open?
No. No, I think we're gonna hit our targets and get the return on the investment that we laid out and improve the service levels to our stores as we planned. But I'll say that there's just a lot of different interesting developments and that I think we've handled very well. So, for example, I can say yes to that part of your question, but I can say on the other side of the coin, we've incurred higher pilot costs and we've driven offsetting efficiencies through plane-ready pallets and other innovations. But as you are probably aware, there's a shortage of pilots, and we've come with some very, I think, creative ways, and the culture of the company is such, NSA I'm describing now, that they've done extremely well keeping and attracting and retaining pilots, but it's a higher cost. So there are some efficiencies with the Thompson base, but then there's some other costs in the business. So I think without getting too granular on these puts and takes, I hope the more important message is that we're executing the overall plan operationally and financially. And we continue to uncover other opportunities. We have to be very disciplined because we're here first and foremost to serve the cargo needs of our northern stores. But you can imagine opening up the base in Thompson, having the fleet that we have. These ATR 500s are the only one of their type in the north. But they've got thrust to do short takeoff landing, and they've got extra payload. There's a lot of third-party customers interested in our services. So NSA is evolving, and our focus is on delivering just what we've invested in and then seeing what happens after that. But I'm happy that for every cost we see that may be a little higher than we thought, we're finding other ways to generate revenue or find efficiencies working more closely with the Northwest Company logistics team.
All right, thanks. And then just leading off from that, I guess as you've owned this business for some time now and you look at the opportunities that are available, as you look out over the next year, 2 years, what is the thought process around adding new planes to bring more of your freight in-house and potentially serving some of these folks that might be interested in your services? Kind of what's the plan to grow that platform over time?
It's not written down in a way that we would communicate yet. We have to be... And I think you'd appreciate, given where we are now, the NSA team heads down, optimize what we're doing today. Yes, pick up some third-party business where it makes sense, but stay focused. I think after that, I think we do have to be way more precise than I just have been about longer term. It's going to wait for a couple quarters. Because the other side of it is there's some very just interesting options on the way you could grow a business like this and still stay true to differentiating yourself with your retail value proposition, which means getting product through your stores to your customers better than anybody could. And when you add other elements to that business proposition, there's just more choices. And even though it's been a year, it's been a long time, we're still learning what those opportunities are. And the other aspect is that it's a multi-regional business. We appreciated that out of the gates, but Northern Ontario, Northwestern Ontario is different than Northeastern Ontario, which is different than Northern Manitoba, which is different than Kivalliq, which is the Central Arctic, which is different than Kikitalik, which is the Eastern Arctic, Baffin Island. So each one has its own sort of logistical ecosystem and presents their own opportunities and, in some cases, risks. So we have to really get our head around those regional situations and it's been, I would say, more than enough for us to stay focused on the northern cargo aspect. Going back to my comment about the revenue that that implies, like that revenue growth means flights, it means hours of airplane flying, it's personnel maintenance. Another area, by the way, which has cost upside for us in terms of savings, which is the maintenance part of the business. So that could be an area that we move faster on, just on our current base. How do we really optimize all of our cost inputs compared to what we have today?
Okay, and then just switching to, I guess, Northern Canada side of the business, you mentioned you are seeing some investment dollars being put into that market. Just based on the larger government infrastructure spend that's planned for that area, do you have a line of sight to more projects over the course of 2019 and onwards, or is it just kind of some initial dollars being put into the ground there?
Well, our ships are having a very good season. Again, you've heard me say this before, that's a good proxy for ships are full. That's all construction material. All the information that we get from government tells us that we're net positive. There's growth in housing and there's growth in infrastructure. So this would carry into 2019 for sure, because the lead time is, like last year was a good shipping season, so now we're seeing the results of that in the CBIF communities in terms of their expenditures. Some of the programs that are announced on health infrastructure and housing infrastructure are back-ended. So there's more dollars in 2020, 2021 with the federal government. Some of it is process related. There's a call for proposals on how to create innovative housing for northern communities. We're not part of that right now, but there is capital coming from different ways. On the resource side, most of that is known, but there's a few new developments around Baker Lake. In the Agnico Eagle sites, there's a couple other companies looking around there too. And then there's the Baffin Lands is going to be building, it looks like a railway. So there's a lot of activity in different parts of Nunavut. It's hard to put that down into, like, what would that mean for top line? But it, generally speaking, you know, we think about a couple points of sales when the North is really clicking, which it seems to be moving towards this year, next year.
All right, thanks. And then one last one on sort of your top categories and the C-store strategy. Is that something, are you still kind of making progress on there, and any update on that front?
Well, I think one brief update, we shipped 5 stores up, modular stores, so they'll all be opening in the next 6 weeks or so in the Arctic. We think we plan for about a dozen more of those over the next couple of years. Let's see, in the quarter we acquired 1 C store. I think that's it, or did we acquire 2? It's still front and center. I mean, top categories is going to morph into an overall get sales mantra at Northwest. We have an initiative called Pure Retail, which is very process driven, but it's about liberating hours to get sales or reduce cost structurally in our stores. And I'll still talk about convenience, because I'm going to emphasize, as we grow that part of our business, and we have, it's got a great CAGR, and it's very profitable, and we do expect to see margin expansion through those categories this year by year end. So overall, yes, we're pleased. I mean, if you took a medium term stance, you would, I think, rightly question us on, okay, what happens after that? I mean, if you solidify your convenience offer, it seems to be, you know, e-com proof. It's got other advantages. It plays to your bricks and mortar strength. But what else? And that's where, you know, as we look at strategy at Northwest, are we investing more in the Caribbean? Are we looking at complementary adjacent spaces in northern Canada? Where does Giant Tiger fit for growth? Those are some of the fundamental questions that we'll talk more about over the next 2 quarters.
And sorry, if I could just sneak in one more on your last comment there. Historically, you know, you were relatively protected from e-commerce. Are you seeing any creep up from some of the larger retailers with their offerings in northern Canada at all?
We're not seeing a creep up. What we saw was a lockstep. Like if Amazon keeps using Prime, and if someone else pays for it, maybe the post office, someone does, and non-economically ships product into Iqaluit that we can't compete with, then that's Iqaluit. And that's what's happening today. That's not happening in other northern locations. A Walmart may pop up once in a while where they'll ship without proper freight for a while. So when we look at e-com that way, we don't see it like it's this huge trajectory of business encroachment or market share encroachment on us. We are going to be testing grocery e-com in the third quarter, should be near the end of the third quarter. But ours is a different solution. We're trying to reinvent the way it would work with lower income customers, because as you would probably know, that they're not e-com leading edge. They'd be the folks least likely to buy on e-com, at least in an urban setting. But for us, e-com has to be a cost saving to the customer. Not a convenience, obviously, because our store would be more convenient than waiting for an e-com order. So we're still trying to get the leaned out cost structure that supports that. Clearly one piece of the puzzle is the airline. Today it's focused on our current business, which is the legacy in-store bricks and mortar assortment, but it's going to be an enabler of some form of e-com, depending on frequency requirements and whether our customer will meet us halfway. We know for non-food, e-com and just ordering direct, whatever it was before, even before e-com was very prevalent, it was not a big space for us. And we will be looking at that starting this month with motorized parts, which is a natural, and some other related motorized accessories. And then we'll look at other categories. And just keep testing with our customer how they think about e-com from a pantry loading standpoint, credit, pre-planning of purchases, those ingredients that are requisites may not always show up in the psychographic of our core shopper. If we create those enablers for them and keep it proprietary to us and our relationship with them, then maybe we can see something happen. So it's a very long answer, but I'm just kind of letting you know that e-com doesn't set up naturally for the North because of the consumers and the logistics. But it may set up under the right conditions where you start to go after and mitigate those barriers. Where it happens today in full force is on low cube, lightweight, high value items. And I go into the store, I'll see product coming from China on Alibaba. I don't sell that product in our stores, so it was going through the Sears catalog before. And then I see this arbitrage stuff going into the Iqaluit through the post office on Amazon Prime. That would concern me. If that went across the North, then I would get an Amazon Prime account for Northwest or something. I don't know. But anyways, that's where e-com is right now.
Okay, Tavo, we're going to have to move on to the next caller.
Thank you. We'll take our next question. Your line is open. As a reminder, please state your name and your company name before posing your question.
Yeah, hi, it's Neil Linsall from Industrial Alliance Securities. So guys, can you sound very positive on all the potential going on in the Caribbean right now. Just so I understand it completely, you have the local economy, you have the reconstruction market, and you have the tourism industry, right? So can you explain a little bit more about where you're seeing the potential? Are you, say, the first store that's opened and you're getting a lot of, you'll get a lot of benefit, or are you seeing the reconstruction market will take a couple of years, it'll supplement the missing tourism market, or is everything going to be growing, say, in the near term?
The reconstruction market or economy will continue for a year or two, just based on the pace of whether it's, for example, so here in BVI, everyone's different because they're sponsoring territorial government is different. It could be Dutch government, could be French, St. Martin, St. Martin. It could be the U.S. FEMA and USVI. here it's the British government. So they put together a $400 million loan guarantee program. We had a dinner last night that we hosted for the Premier, the Governor, and most of the key ministers. And the sense was that they're going to activate that, but it's a guaranteed loan. But they've got to think about how they're going to pay it back, and they're being cautious. I mean, it's, you know, they're being very cautious because it's a year now into it. And I look out my window here from the store, and I see some infrastructure that's public infrastructure that should be rebuilt. So that'll get going. But that, just look at the pace of that, and I'd say we're at least two more years of spending, maybe longer. And it's probably better that it's paced out. It's certainly a serious inconvenience for people who have to use these facilities. But the strain on the economy for construction workers and supplies, like just to get our, finally get the tender out of our St. Thomas store, and now it's, you know, the construction is starting in part because of a lack of contractors, can't find steel, that kind of thing. So this looks like it's going to be protracted. Will it, you know, will that overlap with tourism recovery? Yes. I mean, again, BVI looking out the window and the harbor with the yacht business, that should be in good shape for this season. There'll be some infrastructure impairment, but it's the two can coexist. You know, and each market tells its own story. So that's the story there. In St. Martin, they have to make sure that there's transparency, the Dutch government, before they release the funding that they're committing to. FEMA is still very active in the BVI. Schools and hospitals are being rebuilt. I mean, USVI. So I think, Neil, that the best projection would be that we're looking at 2 years, 3 years of reconstruction. Tourism recovery will take place as hotels are rebuilt and ports are operational. The cruise ship industry will come back. It already is. So if anything, there could be a bit of a stress on the labor market. Well, we've noticed already that rental rates are way up in these islands because there's temporary construction workers that are very well paid, more than retail employees. So that's kind of the scene that we're seeing right now. And I did, you know, I mentioned Barbados, where we've got this, it's a bigger market, 300,000 people. There's new competition. Okay. Wasn't part of the hurricane. That would be a good thing, of course, but it doesn't have this. And nobody would want a hurricane so they can get the reconstruction funds. That would be bizarre. But in the case of Barbados, structurally, that's a difficult economic situation. Their credit situation is poor, and the consumer, they've put on extra taxes on the consumers. They took some of them off. There's been a real dampening of consumer demand there, and nothing wrong with the market long term. It's not overstored, but it is going through this situation now fiscally that is a factor and way different from the other markets that we're in. I was going to say Cayman is an example where it's a robust economy and pre-post hurricane doesn't seem to matter. It's a high-end tourism market and it's got great CAGRs on GDP and sales for us.
Okay. So if I just think about that as a summary, though, so you are expecting to see increased revenue growth beyond what you initially anticipated when you purchased the road town, and with potentially you're going to get higher inflation in some of these areas as well, which will help, you know, further increase the top line. Any concerns about getting supply into any of these stores with this increasing demand?
Yes. I'm looking out the window of the office on top of our store. The port is backlogged. I'm looking at containers right now. The capacity of these ports did not contemplate the amount of construction material coming in. We have had bottlenecks from that side of things. We had bottlenecks. The St. Martin store should have opened 3 months ago, and the bottlenecks were in the port. Besides getting steel, fine steel, the ports were crowded with construction containers. So we're working with the port authorities. One of the ministers last night is responsible for that, and he's sympathetic. But there are those kind of strains on the capacity of the supply chain.
Okay. But as far as the reconstruction, you're kind of ahead of the game or ahead of other players so that you can benefit to be up and running to benefit from that increased activity in the economy.
Well, sitting here in BDI, we are, and in St. Croix, St. Martin, we got backed. But at St. Thomas, it's not a good situation because we were one of the unlucky ones. And I'll say unlucky only because now we know that store, when it's rebuilt, will be, if there's any store left standing, it'll be our store. This time it wasn't, so I have to stress that because that store was a very big store, sales-wise.
So, okay, the store short-term hit there, but over the long run as well, this won't be the last hurricane likely that hits the area. So in future years, as we look over the longer term, you're actually going to be able to benefit.
As we evolve our risk adjust our plans for the Caribbean and everyone does for climate change, resiliency is the operative word. And then of course that can help bring your insurance rates down. They've gone up a lot this year. So we can price that risk in terms of our expected returns. But I think the resiliency is the key. If we are able to operate through hurricane situations or have minimum downtime, then I would call it a net positive. But it's never that. It just means that you can now sustain your business. And we couldn't say that before. I mean, those hurricanes last year changed the game in terms of resiliency.
And just not in the Caribbean, but I think in the northern communities or in your northern stores, you were putting in a new point-of-sale system. You had a rollout, better work on the merchandising. Can you give us an update on how that's gone, if there's been any problems? Is that complete now?
It's not complete. Maybe I wasn't specific enough, but we're actually just this week, our first store was installed in Canada, and then there were no problems, so we'll continue the rollout through the fall, and then Alaska next year. We're running, if you look at the total system project, I'd say we're about a year behind. The cost hasn't been higher. It's been time. We've had some of the mods that we put into the business. We have a very sophisticated pricing system, and it was well known to our vendor. And now, it's without getting into all the technical aspects, and the next release from the vendor is going to have these mods, and we're going to have to wait till January. That has to do with our merchandising system. So the merchandising system should have been up a lot and live totally. The pricing system is not, and that's the category optimization piece. As a item file, it's live. It runs our core database now for products. So that's the merchandise management module. The workforce management is fully installed. And then the last piece, which was still a ways away, is automatic replenishment. And although we like it a lot from a lean retail, pure retail standpoint, we're doing a double check right now to make sure that it's going to deliver the results. It's a big, big process change in our stores. I personally think it's the right thing from a shrink control, labor efficiency, but I do appreciate that it's a big change. We've done it in Giant Tiger and it cost you less. So that was kind of the last phase of the project, and we'll decide whether to go forward with it on the cost benefit. The others are underway. They're delayed. They're all moving forward. These aren't insurmountable technical problems, but there is a bit of, the vendors had other priorities. I'm not going to say we're overjoyed with that. And now we're in the queue to release the functionality we finally need for international and the rest of Canada in January. So that's the merchandise side. The point of sale is rolling out this fall, starting Canada, then we'll go to Alaska. Cost of this was already rolled out, so we're now moving through the other banners.
Okay. Good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question. As a reminder, when your line opens, please state your name and company name before posing your question. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Mike Van Elf, TD Securities. Just
just looking at Giant Tiger, you talked about some price inflation coming through. Can you give us a little bit more color on the recent kind of changes or status of the competitive environment and how that pricing is getting passed through now compared to how it was in past months or quarters?
Well, again, there's more inflation, and we're seeing it, and we're not the thing that made it different. I mean, it's we probably weren't paying as much attention to it because we were marching to our own tune of very aggressive promotional pricing, and we had a different stance on how we thought we should be driving the business food wise. So it's kind of a confluence of two things. We've changed our pricing approach, so we're not as intensely promotional. And we've also noticed that there's way more cost increases coming through that are sticking in the marketplace, probably more than we've seen in 5 years.
And what level of inflation would you expect to kick in the back half?
1.5 to 2.
And then
I'm going to say that we're. Tobacco's gone up. We had two big price increases in tobacco. I don't know if you care as much about that, but that's a significant part of our business in Giant Tiger in Northern Canada. So that's baked into that. It would probably be of that 2%, probably half a point would be tobacco driving.
That's the tax side of it or a price increase?
Tax and price and cost.
Okay. And then the St. Thomas store, I think you said it's open in the next 15 months or so. Do you have a more specific time frame?
I wish I did. I wish I could say it would be September 5th, 2019. But, I'll stick with what you just said.
Okay. And then at one point, it seemed like the hurricane the aggressive hurricane season last year was going to create some acquisition opportunities, and I'm wondering what the M&A environment looks like right now for Cost-U-Less.
Well, it's still there, but we've taken a deeper breath here, and I started to allude to some of these, I call them strategic options. I can see the path. I mentioned resilience on mitigation of hurricane risk. But I think we've got to be laser sharp on understanding what that risk is. When we run our IRRs on our business units, that we price the cost of capital, the cost of the business properly. And the sellers have to too. So I think we need a little bit of a shaking out period here. Everyone takes a deep breath and sees. Like, we're looking at this very objectively, I hope. It's the recency effect says we're going to have a hurricane tomorrow, but there's the other effect that says, knock on wood, we dodged that one. Well, no, they're going to happen. So you better have a higher cost of capital, higher return, even after your mitigation. All the vendors may not, potential sellers may not see it that way yet. Maybe they never do, but we've did park that. We keep relationships and conversations open, and one thing I can share is that as a discussion point is we are assessing whether the model should be to be deeper on an island like RTW or to take Cost-U-Less as a format across more islands or some combination. Our bias right now is to go deeper on fewer islands and then make sure we understand they're the right ones, of course. And be more vertical like we are here with distribution, wholesale, and multi-format. We're still going to have great Cost-U-Less stores that may be the only stores we have on particular islands, but that's just another kind of update for I guess, investors and the way our thinking is. And then that'll dictate how we enter. I think acquisition will be clearly part of that, but it will depend now on as we get a little more advanced in our thinking on how we screen these and filter where we want to be. We may exclude some islands and some potential acquisitions that we were looking at this time or shortly after this time last year. So So it's evolving, but it's moving pretty fast too, and we'll keep updating you as we, you know, as we get through our strategy work down here.
I'd assume when you're talking about going deeper, you're not necessarily talking about trying to fit in another big, you know, larger format store, but maybe some more C stores or grocery stores.
Well, when you say larger format, the larger format store in terms of warehouse style is the Costco-less format. The store that where we have our office here in Roadtown is above a called a conventional supermarket. We have smaller C store, super grocery, grocery type stores on the island. We're the leading wholesaler on the island, and we're the leading distributor here. And what we don't do is fuel. But we run the gamut of I call it everyday retail services. We don't do hardware. I'm not sure our business license allows us to. That's fine. And we're in a pretty big space already. So when you say large format, you could have a large supermarket. It doesn't have to be small, like the one we're in, our main store here in Roadtown. So you could conceivably have a large supermarket and it cost you less on the same island.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and take our next question. Once again, as a reminder, please state your name and company name before posing your question.
Hey, it's Matt Bank, CIBC. On Giant Tiger, just trying to get a sense of how optimistic things are here. So sounds like you're turning a corner in soft and hard goods and also seeing some price inflation in food. You also mentioned last quarter's conference call that this business has a significant amount of torque to it. So how should we think about earnings growth in the near term for Giant Tiger?
Well, I would say be guarded because here we are heading into a hot, dry fall. And what drove our spring sales may not drive our fall sales. The torque is in the soft goods and hard goods. And if you get some margin expansion in food, then you're away to the races. If you're treading water in food and you're getting the torque in GM, that's good. But if you don't get either, that's bad. So I'm going to tell you that the food is it's not catching a falling knife. It's stabilized, and that's great. But there's no serious margin expansion going on. Soft goods, hard goods just came out of a great quarter, and I can't tell you because I'm a little nervous actually on how warm it is in September. So that's kind of the GT size up. You'd tell from what I mean. I'm guarded about the torque would take a little bit more. It's a low margin, high volume business. So it takes place. The torque happens. You do get a nice jump up in EBITDA, but the materiality level compared to the northern businesses, it's a very small piece of the puzzle. And just when you're modeling or thinking about upside at Northwest, we're happy that the downside seems to be covered right now, but as I say, I'm a little worried about the weather in the fall right now.
Okay, thanks. And I just want to jump around on a couple quick detailed questions. So on 2019 CapEx, you mentioned sustaining CapEx of $60 million include the airline. Would there be non-sustaining capital investments in the airline in 2019?
Well, that's a question. I know there's a lot of lead time, too, so if we're going to answer it, it'll probably be the next quarter, no later, because of lead time for aircraft. But that ties to our strategy and the factors that I mentioned earlier about the options we have, and we're not quite ready to pull the trigger on anything other than our core cargo service to northern businesses, our northern stores, and our legacy passenger business. So, I'll put it this way, if the more likely CapEx would be to drive efficiencies, like the Thompson base is eventually, and anything beyond that, like growth to drive revenue, third-party revenue, we've got a bit more of analysis to do before we disclose that. you know, our bias is to optimize what we have. We've got a lot of capital for this business. It's going the right way. If fantastic opportunities are presenting themselves, we have to look at them seriously. But I think we also have time on our side there. So we just want to manage that from an execution standpoint. So hard to say right now whether there'd be anything sizable next year.
Okay. And then my last question. Is it possible to quantify or just give some order of magnitude on the sum of these one-time events, so the wildfires, the one-time payments, and the Bethel liquor store in the quarter?
Well, we didn't do it, so I'm going to say they're material enough that I should mention it. And I don't know how much more to say except that if they didn't happen, we would probably be a dividend increase. We would be happy with the quarter and the bottom line, and I think our investors would be too. But no, we decided not to quantify them.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question. Please state your name and company name before posing your question. Your line is open.
Jim Duran from Barclays. Good afternoon. Just on Giant Tiger, with the change in your food pricing strategy, how long has that been in place for now, and how many more quarters would you expect it to be a drain to your revenue line?
It started in mid-June, and so we're going to see, you know, depending on inflation in the market and what other retailers are doing with cost pass-throughs, you know, this could be something that goes on for a couple more quarters.
Okay. And
now, GP dollars, I'm just going to say that GP dollars should be fine if we're doing this right.
Yeah, it's just top line, right? And from the perspective of your e-commerce conversation earlier, right now, does the majority of your customer base in Northern Canada have access to the internet? And do you have a sense of how active they are in e-commerce with Walmart and or Amazon at this juncture?
Our impression is that the bandwidth is fine for e-com almost everywhere. It's not great for streaming anything. So, you know, when you think of internet usage, in any rich platforms, so I just walk that back a little bit. Any content-rich websites are not good. But what we see, and we watch this very, very carefully, probably the biggest in terms of the quantity of product that's going into the north is coming out of China. And it's Alibaba or eBay or they don't disclose who the seller is. You can't tell. That's where we see most of the growth. And again, they tend to be soft good items or small electronic items. Walmart, there's nothing significant in Amazon or Walmart that's more than it was 3-4 years ago.
And what about credit card? Like, what's the penetration at credit card amongst your core customer group?
It would be amongst our core customers, which would be 3/4 of the shoppers in our markets. It would be quite low. I would say less than 25%.
So
now we would have, but the other 75 would have a Wii Financial card, which is a prepaid Visa card product that we sell.
Right.
So they are financed. They can load those cards and shop online.
And so from a competitive threat standpoint, e-commerce is not necessarily taking a big chunk out of your market opportunity at this juncture. So if you were to pursue e-commerce, you'd be doing it for preemptive reasons, am I right? And the market opportunity...
Well, it's very important. Yeah, I think that's a very important insight. I think we have to preemptive, like this is a long-term play. Like if you could fundamentally, could you lean out your cost structure enough to offer a price proposition that was compelling enough to do the forward buy, to pantry load, to plan your purchases, and go against your normal consumer behavior to save all this money? And could we deliver that savings through a leaned out bricks and mortar offer? We have to test that, because you're right, we could be taking our own sales. Every dollar of out shopping could be $2-3 of sales we have. Now, what would the margin structure of that look like? Could you price it so that, you know what, you're pre-selling it, you picked up receivables instead of inventory, you've got higher turns on receivables, you hit inventory, your shrink is going down. There's going to be a lot of other cost factors here that we're starting to model. But it's a little bit different than just saying we want to expand the market by going after e-com. It's about, is this a better deal for everybody? You know, should we be doing it because we have the ability to do it? If it works for the customer, it'll work for us long term.
I would assume that having NSA now kind of increases the desire to consider it, right? And you, because you end up, you know, as you already did, but now maybe a greater reach, you have the most sophisticated distribution capability in that market.
Yeah, so it's about building, can you build a gap there that the customer will give you credit for? And as you layer on that, out of the gates, we're going to be more, we use the post office for some of our e-com out of the gates, and we're going to use NSA, compare the two, and we're going to learn a lot, be very selective on where we offer it at the beginning, and really watch the consumer, what would trigger the way they'd want to use e-com.
Is there any rationale that would convince you to? Is there any rationale that would convince you to partner with an Amazon or Alibaba or anybody else?
I think it's how much of the value chain could you be capturing and sharing? I think if we say our expertise, as it is for our bricks and mortar business, is the move and the sell, and knowing what to sell, not necessarily what to buy. If you know what to sell, you can find it from somebody. You don't have to be the guy who goes to China with the buyer. If you look at it that way, then yeah, I mean, someone could plug into you at the beginning of the value chain, and if you focus on move and sell, it just depend on the economics of that. And we haven't dismissed the idea, but right now, out of the gates, we want a fully controlled vertical on this, or horizontal, I should say, and then we'll see. I think we have to prove the logistics piece really, really well and the order fulfillment piece really well, and then I think if we ever had something that was compelling, it would be compelling to someone like Amazon, you know, then we'd have, you know, something to talk about. Right now, Amazon is happy with the post office, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Especially in Iqaluit.
Okay. Just one last question, just going back to the Canadian business overall. Earlier you mentioned that if there wasn't disruption going on in Alaska, that the comps might have been like 3%. With all the initiatives you've got in place in Canada, is it fair to say that the Canadian comps would have been in a similar range if it hadn't been for the disruptions that have been going on?
They would be. They'd be in that range.
And part of that strength, because it's a good number in the context of, you know, the grocery business, obviously, is that a function of the C-Store initiative and some of the other initiatives you've, you know, thrown at that business over the course of the last couple of years? And you would see that potentially strengthening if we do get this inflation bump that you're starting to see now and that the rest of the market's also anticipating?
Yeah, I think it would cross through the whole sort of grocery assortment channel, but in the C-store type merchandise mix, we sell the pricing flexibility is the strongest, and the pass-throughs, the value is still perceived and so forth. So yes, that mix swing, and it goes all the way from food service to the packaged convenience. is helping us right now. The other thing that's helping sales, and we, as you know, over the as the cycle kicks in where there's more discretionary income, then our big ticket sales take off. And we're starting to see that. That's what happens when people have wage economy situations and they have paychecks can pay for down payments or outright cash of an ATV, a snow machine, or a boat and motor. We're actually scrambling to get enough units to get to the north.
Interesting.
We line up stuff that we couldn't get for the sea lift, and our stores are crying for merchandise, and we'll get it there, but it's that's the other part of the coin. And, you know, we've shown that, and sometimes we've explained it in more detail, but that could be the real icing on the cake if the sales keep chugging along here, is that we'll see some nice general merchandise business, hard goods, big ticket hard goods.
Okay, great. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time. Mr. Kennedy, I'd like to turn it back over to you.
Okay, thanks everyone for dialing in and tuning in to our conference call. We'll look forward to being back with you early in December with our Q3 results. Again, thanks very much.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.